This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In his new book, Bruce Stockler tells a funny story. He and his kids are at the mall when suddenly all four of them announce in unison that they have to go potty. Bruce finds the men's room filthy beyond use, but the children are frantic, so the only option is a voyage into the unknown. The ladies are aghast at the invasion of the women's room, and a security guard is more than a little suspicious, but so goes the life of the full-time stay-at-home dad. In a way, he's not unlike the left-handed. He lives in a world designed and built for the other people. Though there are no hard figures on the numbers of stay-at-home dads, the census reports that just over 20% of preschoolers in married couple households are cared for by their fathers. That's up from 17% in 1997. Is this truly a growing phenomenon or just another interesting quirk in the ever-changing landscape of the American household? Well, if you're a stay-at-home dad, give us a call and tell us how it's going and how tired you are of Mr. Mom jokes. We'd also like to hear from you if you're raised by a stay-at-home dad or if you're a working mom who depends on your partner. We want to hear your funny stories, your concerns, and your questions. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Later in the program, we'll celebrate the late comic Bob Hope with our memories and yours. We'll talk about his time, among other things, on USO tours, and Anne Margaret will be joining us. But first, Bruce Stockler is with us from New York. He's chronicled his experiences as a stay-at-home dad in his book, I Sleep at Red Lights, A True Story of Life After Triplets. Bruce Stockler is a former journalist, a stand-up comedian, and a joke writer for Jay Leno. He's with us from our bureau in New York City, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks very much, Neil.
I mentioned the Mr. Mom jokes. I think Jay Leno called you the Mr. Mom for the new millennium.
Yes, he did. That was very nice of him, actually.
He wasn't joking, though, was he?
No, I suppose I am a Mr. Mom for the new millennium. But the job I do is, like you said, done by a lot of men. And for me, it's actually really exciting. It's changed my life in every conceivable way and made me a lot more mature and really gotten me to a whole new level of sort of personal happiness. And our whole family's been reorganized in the process.
Mm. Now, you and your wife first had a son. And then at that time, you were both working, right?
We were both working full-time, and we had one son who was 3 years old, and we were going through in vitro fertilization, and then we discovered we were having triplets.
At that time, though, you had a deal with your wife, an arrangement of how things were going to be set up in your house.
That's right. Well, basically, she was working about 80, 90 hours a week as a corporate attorney. I worked as an editor at Trade Magazine. And basically, we had it that my job would be expendable if need be, and we had to protect her job because she was making about triple what I was. And so I took over the diapering, and I took over the staying up late with a kid when he was sick and getting up early in the morning and doing the shopping. And then that really just continued. And when we discovered we were having triplets, we didn't really talk about it, but that became the kind of blueprint for how the family ran later.
Though the logistical differences between one kid and four, well, they're considerable, aren't they?
It's a lot. Just the volume of diapers coming in the house, the volume of garbage going out of the house, the hours staying. The sleep deprivation was really incredible. The first year, I basically averaged about 2 hours a night of sleep, and that actually continued for about another 6 months or so because I was so used to not sleeping that I would wake up hearing sounds or thinking someone was choking or crying. I would have sort of auditory hallucinations. I'd hear babies crying when I was on the subway. And so that model for me not sleeping and getting up and taking care of the kids really continued for a long time.
Was it immediately decided that once the triplets were on the way that you could not continue working?
No, not really. I kept my job until about the babies were maybe 15 or 16 months old. My wife really had tried for a while to get me to get a higher paying job, but the pressures of me just coming home and taking over for the babysitter.
I bet you're the first husband who's ever been asked to do that.
Yeah, maybe the first one. But my wife, when I met her, she was an attorney, and over the next few years, she got a little more disillusioned, and she wanted to make a switch. And we both tried, and just couldn't make it happen. And then when the triplets came, we had to make some tough decisions. We had to move out of the city to the suburbs. She had to keep her job, and I kept my job, and that didn't really work out in that I had to do a lot of traveling for business, and finally it came to a head and I had to leave my job.
Mm-hmm. Now, how were you treated when you started showing up at the playground at 2 o'clock in the afternoon with the kids?
Well, it In the suburbs, there's a little more suspicion of a dad who is alone. In the city, in New York or any other big city, there's a sort of sexual suspicion, as if I was Bill Murray and the kids were kind of my dog and I was trying to pick up women with the kids. In the suburbs, they're wondering where the mom is, because why is the dad out here all alone, especially when there's four of them? So, in the suburbs, things are a little more external. So here's a dad, here's four kids, there's something wrong with the equation. And I think that was an immediate suspicion.
Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Our guest is Bruce Stockler. He's the author of the new book, I Sleep at Red Lights, A True Story of Life After Triplets. And let's go to Jeremy, who joins us on the line from Dana Point, California.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm really glad you're having this topic, because it's we're a small minority, and it's hard to find people to talk to you about this. We moved from Portland, Oregon to Dana Point, California about 4 months ago, and I was a school teacher up in Portland. And we moved, my wife got a promotion, which enabled me to stay home, and I was all excited about it. Woohoo, you know, stay home. It sounds like this idyllic life, and in some respects it is, but the hardest part for me has been putting my life on the back burner. I mean, my goals, my aspirations, that's been really hard. And
Bruce, has that been a problem for you?
It has been. And when you have, if you're a stay-at-home father for one or two children, I think you can juggle. But I had three kids the same age. They were babies. I had an older one. And at some point, not only did I give up my career, I also gave up my sort of creative writing dreams, being a screenwriter, a comedy writer. It just all ended for me one day, and I said, you know, I really got to focus on being a dad. And so you get, it's a lot of ego. You know, we define ourselves as men by our successes, whether it's, for me, was being a successful comedy writer, or for someone else rising in business or becoming a partner at a law firm instead of an associate. And you have to give a lot of that up, and it's hard. At the same time, I was getting so much more enjoyment out of being home that the trade-off became really, you know, for me, it was an easy decision.
Yeah, it's some of each. I because I love my son, and we have another one on the way, and it's challenging and motivating and exciting, and he's a beautiful boy, and I just really enjoy him. And at the same time, I miss the things I was doing.
One thing I've heard from women who stay home with their children is that by the time 5, 6, 7 o'clock rolls around, they are desperate to have a conversation with somebody who can actually construct an English sentence.
My mom, my parents are visiting right now, and my mom was talking about how often I call her. And I call my parents on a regular daily basis just to have someone to talk to, because my wife is working and I can't really bother her. And my circle of friends has changed. All my friends are now women, other moms, because that's, you know, common ground. And it's hard to relate to my old friends, my guy friends anymore, because, you know, they don't know exactly what I'm doing. And it changes everything. And you really, if you're going to do it, you got to be willing to really put yourself on the back burner for a while.
Bruce, what about you? Do you hang around with the wives at the barbecue now?
Well, the weird thing about being a stay-at-home dad is you're not really a mom, and then you're not really a dad. You're sort of a third party, like a Ralph Nader or John Anderson. And but you know, without the unpaid interns, that's my secret to life, is having an unpaid intern. So you know, you're kind of an anomaly, and it's hard to fit in. I mean, a dad would say to me, you know, how about that Soriano, trying to talk baseball, and I go, I hear that's a really good restaurant. I have no idea what's going on, and I don't even know what the teams are in the major leagues.
But if you bring up Bob the Builder, they don't know what you're talking about either.
No, well, they might know about it, because dads tend to have the TV references down, but they don't really understand. You know, how does a cardiothoracic surgeon understand being a stay-at-home dad? You can't be a stay-at-home cardiothoracic surgeon. So the whole thing about having a job where you're at home, for a lot of men, it is that they don't understand the logic of it, and I get that.
Jeremy, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And good luck with the new one.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's talk now with Lisa, and Lisa's on the line with us from Prescott, Arizona.
Hi.
Hi.
We had our daughter 15 years ago, and we were older parents at the time, and I took a year off from school teaching, and then I went back to school, and my husband stayed home with our daughter. And it was just, it was interesting. I agree with what the husband just said. You're really kind of a non-entity. You're not really a stay-at-home mom, or it's really hard, I think, for the husbands to get respect doing that.
A lot of people with an ego would have a problem with that.
Yeah, and, you know, I got so tired of people asking me, you know, when is Jim going to get a job? That really, I found that so insulting because to me, you know, to us, he was doing the most important job in the world, raising our daughter. And it was ironic to me that our society, you know, prizes the two-income family and children in daycare, which we just had the show a couple, was it last week, about the aggressive kids from daycare, which I just find the whole thing incredibly ironic. But I just felt like my husband didn't get the respect that he deserved for raising our girl at home.
Well, Bruce, are you? Do some of your friends consider you lazy or a new kind of failure?
No, I'm pretty lucky in that the friends that I have do understand what I'm doing. But you know, I'm 43. As men get older, we generally find it hard to make new friends. Anyway, men are kind of like polar bears. You know, we the older we get, the more isolated we are, and so it's hard to make new men friends, especially in the suburbs where everything's based on, you know, money, the size of the house. I think in the cities, I would have an easier time being a stay-at-home dad, whether it's in New York or San Francisco. But in the suburbs where the modes of understanding, you know, relate to the size of the house or whether you did a tear down or built a new house, it's hard to acknowledge the stay-at-home dad as a kind of a deeper entity than what's on the surface. And it's also very cliquish. I mean, you know, the power in the suburbs radiates outward from the stay-at-home mom clique in school. And, you know, and goes up from there. The thin, large-breasted moms are more powerful than the heavier moms who are married to guys who maybe aren't heads of radiology but are just radiologists. And so it kind of goes outward in concentric circles. And so there's a lot of sort of power struggle that goes on in all that.
Well, Lisa, thanks very much for the call. I hate to ask it this way, though, just in letting you go. Did he eventually find a job?
Oh, yeah, she's older now, so he's gone back to work. And
oh, good.
Yeah, good. Everyone's really shocked, you know, but, you know, they say, oh, he has a job. I say, well, he had an important job. But
well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Let's see if we can talk now with David, who's with us from Indianapolis.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Well, I want to reiterate what so many other people have said, but I won't be that boring. I can tell you that one of the things that's happening here, and I'm a stay-at-home dad for just one, the most wonderful little girl ever, of course, like everyone else's.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because my wife, who loved being pregnant and loves kids and wants as many as I can fill the house with, and I'm having to say, well, day to day, maybe let's wait, or maybe let's think of a few less, because as hard as all of those 9 months are, I just don't think she quite sees what it is for me, and she's ready to move right on, and I just need a little more time.
Yeah, the light approaching at the end of the tunnel, no matter how small a pinprick it is, you start want to calculate the time before the kids start school, right?
I've done a little bit of that, and you know, it just seems so easy when at 5:30 or 6 she comes home and we're all smiling and seemingly happy and the house is clean and all of that, and I'm just not sure that she realizes what a second child might do to my state of mind.
Well, Dave, don't go, skip two and go to three then, three or four.
Yeah, well, and I have to put my heart out to three at the same time, let alone four total. So my heart is with you.
Well, Bruce Stockler, thanks for the call, David.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Stockler did have triplets. We're talking about stay-at-home dads. We're taking your calls at 800-989-8255, or you can send us email at totn@npr.org. Coming up after a short break, the First Gentleman of Michigan, and how does what class you're in affect who gets to stay home? But here's a bit of music from the Bandwagon.
We talk alike, and what is more, we hate each other very much. We hate our folks. We're sick of jokes on what an art it is to tell us apart. If one of us gets the measles,
another one gets the measles,
then all of us gets the measles, and mumps, and croup. How I wish I had a gun, a widow gun. It would be fun to shoot the other two and be only one.
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Today we're talking about stay-at-home dads. Later in the program, we'll remember the late Bob Hope. Our guest is Bruce Stockler. He's the author of I Sleep at Red Lights, a true story of life after triplets. He's with us from our bureau in New York, and we're taking your phone calls at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. And joining us now to talk about being a stay-at-home dad in the spotlight is the first gentleman of Michigan, Dan Mulhern. His wife, Jennifer Granholm, is the state's governor, and he joins us from their residence on Mackinac Island, and thanks very much for being with us.
Glad to be with you. Interesting show.
Well, why did you decide to give up working when your wife won the election last year?
Well, it's a huge job to be governor, and we have three kids, two teenage daughters, going in ninth and seventh grade, and we have a son going into first grade, and, you know, something's got to give. So to me, supporting her in a hugely important job that was important to both of us and not having our kids pay the price for that, all called me to pull back.
Well, I think we're all familiar with, you know, the roles and duties of the traditional first lady. How do those have to be adopted when I guess you're the first gentleman? Is that right?
Yeah, that's my moniker these days. And, you know, in many respects, they're very, very similar, I think, as most women who've had kids, most first ladies who have had kids, have focused on making sure the kids are well and supporting the husband. I've done much the same thing. I have taken the opportunity to engage in the same dialogue that Bruce is stimulating and that you're highlighting today, to talk about changing roles because they're huge. I hadn't thought about it much, but a woman came to me before the inauguration and said, you know, this is historic to have a first man, a first man, and you should talk about that. So we had a first man's forum and had you know, a few hundred people turn out to talk about changing gender roles and the impact for men. So I've been thoroughly enjoying that conversation.
What do you hear?
Well, you hear a lot of different things. I mean, it was funny, the one guy you just had on said, I'm going to reiterate, but I won't be that boring. So I'll probably reiterate and probably be just as boring. But you hear various things. I mean, for some people, it's a real sense of victimization. And for men who've had tough times with friend of the court, you know, in custody hearings and sort of experienced a reverse sexism, there's a lot of pain out there. There's a lot of people feeling, as the woman described her husband, that they're non-entities. But you hear a lot of people hugely enthused about it, that this is an incredible opportunity. And frankly, I like to focus on that. I think it is an extraordinary opportunity to support our wives and to kind of fulfill the women's movement. Without us, I don't think it happens. And also to experience a different and fuller life than our dads actually got to experience.
Well, Dan Mulhern, we appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Glad to be here.
Dan Mulhern is the first gentleman of Michigan, husband to the state's governor, Jennifer Granholm, and he spoke with us from their residence on Mackinac Island. And Bruce Stockler, listening to what Dan Mulhern was trying to address in Michigan, I guess that all sounds pretty familiar.
Yes, it does. I think Dan makes a good point. I mean, my book is funny, but I think the serious part of what Dan is talking about, and I'd like to talk about, is that fatherhood can become a lot more than something that's party love. It can really become the central emotional fact of your life. And in fact, my wife and I, our marriage was a little rocky at one point because she thought that I was too close to the children and not paying attention to her. And in fact, you know, I found that in a way it was easier to become a father than it was to sort of stay married, and because marriage is really complicated, but fatherhood in a way is a lot simpler. I mean, if you put the hours in and you have the love, it's a great job and you can do it.
No, I was just going to ask, there's an email comment we got from Liz Moray in Alexandria, Virginia. As a mother who stayed at home and then went back to work after the birth of my son, I just want to say to these men, get over yourselves. They aren't experiencing anything new. For years now, women have experienced loss of status, loss of income, and isolation after becoming parents. Why is it something that becomes an issue just because men suddenly discover it?
I think she's right in that there's a kind of reverse sexism where, oh boy, now men are home and now fatherhood and staying at home is such a big issue. It's not the staying at home part and doing the laundry and the dry cleaning and all that. It's the fact that men are making a choice to do something different. And, you know, we're the first generation to say, I mean, for men of my age, I think we knew two things about our dads. A, they were never home, and B, when they were home, they were yelling at us. So we're the first generation of dads who's really involved with our kids. And I think that's going to have a huge impact. I mean, everyone who's, all the men I know who are alive today, we're all who we are emotionally basically because of our moms. Our moms were the emotional role model, certainly was for me. And I think that children that we're raising are going to have a whole different, well, a whole different set of issues when they end up going into therapy in college, but they're going to have a whole different set of assets and liabilities because we were home with them and they had two parents who were really involved in their lives.
Ashe joins us now. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. She's from Santa Monica, California.
Hi, yes, you pronounced it correctly. I just want to say I have a different perspective. I'm actually, my dad and mother divorced and there was a custody battle. My dad actually won custody of my brother and I think he was like the first man to do so in New Jersey back in the 70s. And it was really an incredible experience, and I wanted to say that I think it's a shame that more children don't get that kind of attention from their dads because, as your guest was saying, dads are typically the disciplinarians and ones you don't see that much. And my brother and I, and luckily my dad had a family business, was able to stay at home with us and be there when we got home from school. And it was really a treasured experience that I really feel like it's a shame more children don't have. So I'd just like to make that comment.
Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Mark. And Mark is with us on the line from Williamsburg, Virginia.
Hi. I'm a stay-at-home dad, and I guess I'm really enjoying this topic. And I wanted to contribute that I feel like I'm kind of socially between a rock and a hard place because I'm not real interested in forming a club of stay-at-home dads. I'm not sure why. That might be my own bias. But so my social circle is at-home moms, and, you know, you can only go so far there as far as forming close relationships. So,
well, what's wrong with the other stay-at-home dads?
Well, I don't, you know, in my part of Virginia, I don't think there are a lot of us to begin with. And I don't know. I guess maybe I'm afraid we're just going to be the odd duck club or something. I myself feel like an odd duck most of the time.
I know it's a very different organization, but you could just go straight to the Odd Fellows Hall.
Right. but I, you know, I agree with the previous caller about, you know, I'm not wringing my hands and whining that, you know, I'm dealing with some of the same things that women have been dealing with for a long time. But I think socially, because there is a majority of at-home moms, an at-home mom at least, you know, can make some close friends and bond over their at-home experiences. And in my circle, you know, for example, there'll be birthday party dinners where the women all get together, and it's just a little awkward, you know, to invite Mark along where, you know, I'm at home with my wife, you know, and then sometimes my wife goes instead of me. So So they don't quite know how to fit me into the circle, I think.
Bruce, that goes along with along the lines of what you were saying earlier, neither fish nor fowl.
That's right. It's hard to fit in. And I think, you know, for men, the one suggestion that I make is try to focus on your old pals and your old relationships and see those guys when you have some free time on the weekends and make friends with other families where you can get along with the dad. I mean, the hard thing socially is that you have kids that you like that are friends of yours, but the parents you don't get along with. And then you have parents you like and the kids you don't get along with. So if you can just make some friends with other family units where you could be friendly with a dad, there's not that much time left over at the end of the day if you have more than one kid for socializing anyway. So I think in terms of your emotional support, men don't need all that much emotional support. I think if you keep your old friends, you have your kids and your wife to keep you going, I think that you'll be okay. Men aren't really joiners. We're kind of more like Groucho Marx when he said that whatever it is, I'm against it. So I can't see men getting together and discussing the cheapest place to buy the 48-ounce Vaseline.
Right. Well, I think I became a stay-at-home dad when we moved to Virginia, so that became difficult. I didn't have any old friends, but I've made a few friends through the at-home moms that I've met. I've gotten to know their husbands, and so I've got a couple buddies. We just, you know, do things on the weekends. So I guess you're right. That works.
Go shopping for strollers and that sort of thing.
No, we go kayaking.
Okay. Mark, thanks very much. We appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
When the Michael Keaton movie, Mr. Mom, came out in 1983, stay-at-home fathers were a rarity, and much of the humor came from the role reversal. In this scene, Keaton's character, Jake, lectures his wife as she heads off on last-minute business to Los Angeles.
I convinced a man today to spend $11 million on one of my ideas. I gotta go. Besides, honey, there's gonna be other Halloweens, you know.
I know there will be other Halloweens, but I'm thinking about this Halloween. I mean, Carolyn, these kids in a couple of years are gonna outgrow this thing. Megan just got two new teeth. I bet you didn't know that. Alex is playing football. Remember Kenny's security blanket? Doesn't have it anymore. He doesn't use it. It's gone. You know, if you were here, I was going to suggest you go as a ghost. Because even when you're here, you're not here.
Joining us now to talk about the changing role of stay-at-home dads is Natasha Cabrera, an assistant professor of human development at the College of Education at the University of Maryland in College Park, Maryland. And she's with us from her office in College Park. And good of you to be with us.
Thank you.
Mr. Mom was released almost 20 years ago. Is that still the model for stay-at-home dads, the neglected husbands of high-power wives?
You know, I have to confess that I didn't see the movie, or when I saw it, I was very young. But I think, in general, there is a class issue with stay-home dads. I think, as some of the callers have pointed out, and certainly your guests, you know, some men have the choice to stay home, whether they're unemployed and the mother and the wife can pull up, can get an income, or basically, you know, he chooses to stay home because child care is prohibitively expensive. Hmm. But for other men, I think the choice is not, if he can't provide for the families, they really don't see that as a choice to take care of the children.
So this is a middle class and upper middle class and, I guess, upper class issue?
You know, it might be. I think in our own research, and to be fair, I think we don't have a lot of data on why do fathers or mothers make decisions, want partners to stay home. I think it's not clear how couples make decisions, but I think in general we can say that it really is economics. And again, fathers can choose to stay home, but I mean, for a lot of fathers who may be, especially low-income men, who we think as deadbeats if they can't support the families, for them, I think the choice to stay home, it's more of a emphasizing the role that they can provide for their children. So mm-hmm. I think for those men, that might not be a choice.
Is there any data about the effect on children of being raised by a stay-at-home father?
You know, that's an interesting question in itself. I don't think we would ask the question about mothers. You know, what's the effect of mothers taking care of the children? We always assume that they should take care of the children. We don't have national data on what happens to children when, and you're talking about two-parent families where the father stays home to take children, not in single families, correct?
Mm-hmm.
The issue is a little different when obviously there's a single
sure.
family. But no, we don't have a lot of data on what happens to children as a result of having a father stay home. But I do suspect that at the very least, children will learn, just some like one of your callers mentioned, that the fathers and mothers can be both providers and nurturers, that the nurturing is also can also be done by dads, not just by moms.
Well, what we're seeming to be hearing is that families are deciding, when they do decide to make this decision, that the parent with the biggest paycheck will keep working and the other parent will stay at home. That seems a pretty rational way to decide, doesn't it?
Yes, rational. If you weigh in infant care, especially, that is, I don't know whether you're your guest talked about infant care for triplets, but you can not afford infant care with a salary of, less than $200,000, I believe.
Bruce Stockler, let's bring you back in. Was that a factor in your decision?
Sure. The first year we had two sort of three-quarter to full-time nannies. They worked about 8 a.m. till 6 p.m., and I was working full-time, so I would come home at 6 p.m. and take over. They were really expensive. We ended up being in debt to the IRS because we didn't pay our estimated taxes. That year was a nightmare. We just tried to get through it. So you're right, but we couldn't hire enough help. I mean, to have someone stay at night would have been more than we were making, the two of us together. And so that's another part of the decision, in that it was easier for one of us to stay home and suffer the consequences of sleep deprivation and temporary insanity than to have all that babysitting. You just couldn't get enough babysitting help. I mean, there's literally, I read somewhere that triplets require 97 hours a week of care, and when that doesn't include the house and trying to talk to your wife so she doesn't divorce you.
Yeah, you want to keep that family together.
Right.
In infant care, I have to add, I mean, just to emphasize, it's extremely expensive and difficult to find, especially good quality.
Well, Natasha Cabrera, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Natasha Cabrera is Assistant Professor of Human Development at the College of Education at the University of Maryland in College Park, and she was with us from her office there. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News in Washington. And we'll continue with Bruce Stockler, and let's go now to Mark. And Mark is on the line with us from LaGrange, Ohio.
How you doing, Neil?
Okay.
I'm in a special situation. I still work, but I drive tractor trailers for UPS, so I can actually work nights, and my wife works the days. But when I come home, I take my son all day.
And how old is he?
He just turned 5, so I'm getting to the end of this thing, and we made it through because, you know, that title, Sleeping at Traffic Lights, I know what it's all about. You get a good traffic light in the middle of the night, and you go, oh, good, I can get 30 seconds to tip my head back, you know?
That's right.
But, yeah. I mean, I really relate with that because I think I get on the average of 5 to 6 hours of sleep a night because I start work at 10:45. I get off work at 9. My wife goes to work around 8:30. She drops him across the street. I pick him up. And then we do our thing. Like, we go to the driving range sometimes. We don't do the typical mom-style stuff. But I think it works out so much better with me watching him because my wife's kind of a negotiator with my son, where he knows he can negotiate with her. But with me, he knows that what I say is, it's the law.
It's the law.
Right.
And he does not try to negotiate with me. And I think he's become very independent and harder for it. You know what I mean? If harder is a good word.
Hmm. Well, I've never experienced the sleep deprivation that both of you are talking about with childcare. I did fill in for Bob Edwards for several months on Morning Edition, and all I could think of was going to sleep after a while. By Thursday, I was obsessed with it.
Oh, I understand how you feel, because I don't go to sleep. I start at 10:45. I don't go to sleep generally until 4 or 5 in the afternoon when my wife gets home. And then I crash out, and I get up at 9:30, and I go to work again. You know, because I keep him, you know, during the day, and I can't sleep and let him run around the house. I mean, if I let him run around the house, holy cow! But I mean, the only relating that I have, see, I got a lot of stay at home moms on my street, and the only thing I can relate with them is, you know, we know a lot of like SpongeBob episodes, and we know a lot of you know, Cartoon Network episodes. I mean, that's the only thing we can relate with, but the. Other than that, we do a lot of different stuff. Like we cut grass, we weed whack, we go hit golf balls at the driving range. I mean, we don't do the typical stay-at-home mom stuff that a lot of them do. We do a lot of guy stuff, you know. And I think that makes it a whole different ballgame than the stay-at-home mom.
Well, Mark, thanks very much, and get some sleep.
Okay, thanks.
All right, Mark.
Bye-bye.
And Bruce Stockler, we'd like to thank you very much as well for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Neil.
Bruce Stockler is the author of I Sleep at Red Lights, a true story of life after triplets, and he was with us from our bureau in New York City. Coming up after the break, we're going to be remembering Bob Hope, who died last night at his home in California. We're going to be talking about his role in the one medium in which most of us remember him. That's the movies. Obviously, he was also a star in television and on radio as well. We're also going to be talking about his days traveling with the USO. He did a lot of that. A companion on many of those tours was Anne Margaret. The actress will join us to talk about her memories of Bob Hope when we come back after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.